Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Linux Lads, the only podcast that gives you a hug while you're in quarantine or some shit. I don't know. I'm too lazy for these jokes nowadays. As usual, I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.
And Mike's giving us a sexy voice. So, as usual, we're the Linux Lads. And another Wednesday. Here we go. Mike, so you used X to go in anger and it was good.
Yeah.
Please explain.
It does sound a bit dodgy, doesn't it? But yeah, don't call the guards just yet. I've never really used remote desktop much because I've never had any use for it. But I needed to connect to my work PC that's sitting in the office and do something that basically meant that the PC has to be connected to a website for a long time, let's say 10 hours. And I couldn't do that from my home computer because I wanted to shut it down when I went somewhere, and B, I couldn't rely on the Wi-Fi that is going to stay up for that duration of time. So I set up X2Go, which I've never done before, and it was amazingly easy. Bit slow because it's over SSH, but it was easy setup. It gave me all that I needed from a remote desktop, and it allows you to run a session, log in, log out as you need. It's always kind of running, and I've been running it on that desktop actually for days now, and I still can log in. And I think it's basically my favorite find of the lockdown for now.
Is that going to be replacing the boner section, the find of the lockdown?
Yeah.
No, it sounds a bit too much like the find of the Fortnite that they had on Linux Voice. So we can't use that for legal reasons.
Basically, I think that's how the boner section started originally, because I actually wanted to do something similar, like something cool we found every episode, and I don't know, we settled on boner for some reason.
Oh, because it was the coolest thing you could have done. But
on my end, anyway, I dug out my old OnePlus One. I was rearranging the office during quarantine, you know, because I was just trying to stave off insanity. And me and the girlfriend decided to tidy up the whole house and, you know, tackle it a room at a time and all that good stuff. And we tidied up the office, which admittedly is actually way better and much nicer and just a generally nice place to be now. So that's cool. But like, I was going through a big old crate and I found an old OnePlus One and an old OnePlus 3 as well. But that was actually in worse shape than the OnePlus One. So that's a testament to the OnePlus One. The OnePlus One was in, you know, it was worn and torn. It wasn't in perfect condition, but it was fine. And it turned on and it was perfectly functional and everything wasn't slow. I'm going to use it to try out Ubuntu Touch because, why not?
I have a OnePlus One here. It's dead, like the battery's gone, but like it's perfectly functional. It's just not charged. And it's running. That is running Ubuntu Touch, and Ubuntu Touch is the OnePlus One is officially supported by UbiPorts, and I believe now the 3 actually might be as well. But if you say that 3 has seen better days, then maybe stick with the One. But
you can see through the casing in parts. It's so cracked. Like,
okay.
It's so cracked. It had several meaningful interactions with concrete.
I think I remember that phone from when you were still using it, because you brought it to the Long Stone, which also had a meaningful interaction with the ground since and exists no longer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. The poor Long Stone.
Long Stone,
it's one of the oldest pubs in Ireland, and they fucking knocked it down for more offices. Okay. Connor, you also have a OnePlus story.
Speaking of OnePluses and segues, my 5T is back. Woo! It's been back for a while, but our last episode was solely focused on the diva that is Rocco. No, he's not a diva at all. I'm just giving a dig at him. But because that pretty much took up the entire episode last time, I didn't get a chance to talk about it. But it's been in various stages of being back since I've been, was back functional and the stock ROM was on it. And I'm like, ooh, this is cool and is stable, but kind of boring. So of course I started flashing other shit on it, but I didn't quite go as far as doing, going to E. I think I pretty much discovered what E, the problem with E was, and that was the, or E/E or the E Foundation or EOS or however you want to pronounce it, is that the latest official version for my phone is Android 9, and the E ROM, the very latest, had dev written after it. So in other words, it wasn't even a stable. It was like the latest bleeding edge version of it I could, of EOS for my phone, was running, was based off Android 8. So I think what happened was, I either tried to flash it, even though there was a 9, Android 9 firmware on my phone, and I tried to flash an 8 ROM on top of a 9 firmware, or I tried to downgrade the firmware of my phone so that it'll be compatible and acceptable for EOS, which was based on Android 8. Basically, completely and utterly fucked up my phone. Like, everything was corrupted. The data partition, the system partition, everything. Like, I think even the recovery partition was corrupted. So, like, literally, I'd soft bricked my phone, and it was well beyond my capabilities. But his name escapes me at the moment. I mean, the handle that he goes by, but it's the PowerShell on Linux guy. He's on Twitter. He reached out to me on Twitter and said, since I was mentioning it, and said, "Hey, I'm fairly knowledgeable with the 5T. Which one of you guys was having trouble with the 5T?" And I said, "Me." And he said, "Oh, DM me." And we had a DM conversation. And then he literally, one evening on Discord, spent a couple of hours, I'm not even exaggerating, about 2 or 3 hours, like, helping me through it. And we had setbacks. And then he said, "Okay, well, we'll start from scratch, and like, he was very patient, so thank you." I just, name escapes me at the moment, and it's whatever handle that he goes by, but it's the PowerShell on Linux guy, and he is in our our Telegram chat, because on the basis of that conversation we had, I mentioned that we're on Telegram, and then he joined into our Telegram chat group because of that. Thoroughly nice guy. So kudos to him.
That's extremely nice.
That's fair play to him. Honestly, fair play to him. And
that's the great thing about all this, isn't it? It's like, you always find people like that who will do mad things like that. Like, will just spend hours helping you with a problem.
Because I'd pretty much given up on my phone. I mean, I was getting to a stage where I had switched over to my work phone, which is a Samsung Galaxy something or other, which is perfectly fine, perfectly functional, and is dual SIM as well. So I could have had my personal and work number, or work SIM cards in the same phone. It's just that the Samsung UI and the way Samsung customizes Android just makes
sickens me.
Yeah, it just makes Android, it hurts my brain, it makes Android worse for me. They're probably trying to make it more friendly for people who switch over from iOS, but I'm like, no, but if I wanted iOS, then I would have had an iPhone. I want Android to be Android, damn it.
Seriously, fuck Samsung's implementation of Android. Fuck it. I hate it so much. It's the reason I stopped buying Samsung phones. I hate it. It's like, oh, great. Do I want 2 fucking apps of everything? The Samsung version and the Android version?
Yeah, shite. To give you an idea, it's we have Samsung Calendar, and we have Samsung Contacts and everything like that. I'm like, okay, fine, you're writing your own apps, yada yada yada. I'm like, but at least have them all in one store. No.
Then we're going to split them across two stores because yeah. Why not?
Then there's the Samsung store. And what do you think all the Samsung apps do? They update to the Samsung store. They don't update to the Play Store. So you'll get a notification from the Play Store saying, hey, you have five apps that have updates. Do you want to update? I'm like, yeah, fine, click. Okay, that's in the background. Then independently, the Samsung store will say, hey, we have updates too. I'm like, fuck off!
Does it still do this? Is it still like that? Because I thought, okay, I would have thought that this was some kind of an old behavior that they long since decided to eschew in favor of something more reasonable.
My work phone is a fairly up-to-date modern phone. Like, it's, I think it was released in 2019. So yes, they very much still do this.
That's annoying.
No kidding.
Some of the Samsung phones are more expensive than iPhones, and one would expect that you get a decent service.
Well, I did enjoy. Like, I had a couple of Samsung Galaxy S's, and they were all right. Like, they were good phones for the day. Like, they were one of the better ones if you didn't want an iPhone, basically. And you wanted a good Android phone, a Galaxy was probably the one you got. But like, I don't know. For me, I would just, like, as soon as I learned how to do it, I would just wipe the Samsung shit, and I would just put stock Android on it every time, or CyanogenMod for a little while.
I mean, people are saying like, you can put things like Nova Launcher and everything, and fine. You can make it more sane, but you'll occasionally get reminded of the fact that yes, it still is a Samsung device, and I don't even think it had a Bixby button, but the Bixby notifications. I'm like,
it's like, I can't.
It's as annoying as freaking Cortana for Windows. It's like the Bixby for on Samsung phones. It's like, yeah. I mean, the Google Assistant is at least freaking competent. It's at least useful. I get the privacy concerns, and I guess that the fact is, like, I'm like, sure, it's useful, but don't you realize that you're giving all your data to Google? I get that, and then I can make the decision of, okay, it's very useful and is very well written and everything like that, but I choose not to use it because of the privacy concerns. Bixby has both the privacy concerns and the fact that it's a shit app.
Okay, so I think we'll move on to the news. the first bit of news there, actually something I got a little wry, nostalgic smile reading this. It was very very good news that the old Hardy Heron wallpaper is back, and I gotta say I forgot I even knew about this wallpaper, and then I read this and I was like, oh yeah, that wallpaper. And I just kind of, yeah, I don't know, it filled me with a little bit of joy. Do you guys ever use Hardy Heron? Do you remember this at all?
I remember this from back in the day, yeah.
This was the first time I seriously started using Linux, and I am very familiar with that brown background with the colorful bird on it, and with that sound that came with it. Like, you know, do you remember when you turned on 804 and it did some kind of a variation on the you know, Dolby Swoosh or something similar. I don't recall the sound exactly, but it did have a startup sound.
Yeah,
and that does fill me with nostalgia. So this wallpaper is going to be part of the 2004 ISO that it's been remastered by Martin Wimpress from the original SVG, as they write on OMG Ubuntu, and I think that's amazing because it lets you realize how long has this been, how long has it been since at first we started with Linux, because most of us have, I think all of us have actually used 804, didn't we?
Yeah, I have.
And for me, I actually made it work. Like, I had a bit of freedom in the office as for what gear I used, and I actually managed to be, for about 2 years, I managed to be on Linux in the office, and 804 was where it all started. So, you know, there's been some very painful times when I couldn't get the Wi-Fi work and I had to run a very long LAN cable from the router. But,
this wrapper.
Yes.
Remembers that.
And
is that what it was called?
The what?
NDIS wrapper, yeah. I always called it
NDIS wrapper for some reason.
It sounds a bit like Disruptor, like a Klingon weapon.
It was that thing to get your Wi-Fi working. That it was the only thing that worked with certain Wi-Fi interfaces, or I don't know, hardware. You know, Wi-Fi devices.
Sounds like something from Jurassic Park. It's a Wi-Fi Disruptor.
I don't know. I can't think right now. It was basically, yeah, because some Wi-Fi cards or network cards had like these weird proprietary drivers, and this was a way to get it working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? Stop being silent.
I honestly can't remember what it was called. It doesn't stick out in my mind that much.
I remember some kind of a GUI that was like WICTL or something like that. That basically replaced your normal Wi-Fi GUI with, and it was meant to work better. And yeah, but I'm looking forward to seeing the new Hardy Heron on the new ISO 2004.
Yeah. It was God, that's a long time ago. Anyway. QT might get forked because the QT company might choose to restrict new releases to paying customers for 12 months before open sourcing them. Shocking news. Shocking.
Well, they deny it. I mean, they kind of denied it. The Qt company is the company behind the Qt framework for the C++ language. That is basically what KDE and some other desktop environments and a lot of apps in the open source world are made out of, right? So it gives the developers a lot of really nice tools to work with, and it allows for a reasonably rapid creation of applications. And the people who own it, the Qt company, are obviously a commercial entity, and as everybody else, they have to think about making money. And they've had in the past quite a strenuous at times relationship with the open source projects. They make money by selling the same thing that is kind of available for free. Obviously, if you pay money, you can license it you can license your product in any which way you want to, and you can do some. You can link it in a different way, whereas in certain circumstances, if you use Qt and you use the open source version of it, if you don't pay them for it, you have to release it under the GPL, I think. There are some very complicated licensing issues with them as well. And there is this news or this information started by a KDE developer that they are going to basically only open source the stuff after it's been out for the commercial customers for 12 months. That obviously immediately sparked news of people wanted to fork this again, because people in the past wanted to fork Qt because for similar reasons. And they came out with a very, very, very short blog post saying that this is not what they worded it in a specific way. They basically say that they are committed to the customers, open source, and the Qt governance model. So we don't know what's going to happen, but the strenuous relationship in that is not good, because it kind of makes KDE and other projects think about their future, and it's not great for stability. And
So, new GNOME mobile shell mockups tease a tactile future on tablets. That was like a rhyme. Who wrote that?
Joey from OMG Ubuntu, to be specific, because it's directly his article, or the headline from his article. But so on the basis of Phosh, which is the more touchscreen friendly version of GNOME that the people in Purism, and I'm sure a few other developers are developing. So some renders of a touchscreen friendly, but larger variation for, but let's say a large tablet or something like that, are up on OMG Ubuntu, and it looks quite interesting. And one of the criticisms of the GNOME shell in the early days of GNOME 3 was that that it was geared toward touchscreens and it was more of a touchscreen UI, which they're I think they're very much stringent, kind of denying and stringently denying at the moment. But this seems to be a kind of a mock-up from I think one of the guys over in Purism, I think one of the designers in Purism, and he says, okay, this is a mock-up of how GNOME would look like if it was touch-centric, using some of his design cues or design ideas from the Phosh project for the more phone-sized screens. So he's pretty much just blowing it up and making it more tablet-friendly, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I've always expected that all these desktop environments would and should embrace mobile, but yeah, I don't know, the convergence thing in particular is just like, yeah, I don't care about that anymore. I just want Linux on a tablet. That's my desire in life, and I will get it very soon. I know it.
From my viewing of these screenshots and also any demonstrations I've seen of Phosh running on both the Librem phone and also the Pine phone, because different projects such as you can get different backends, like you can get Postmarket OS running Phosh, you can get, I think, even Debian running Phosh on the Pine phone. It seems to be well designed, and fair play to them for managing to do that, to get the GNOME apps and everything like that all kind of touchscreen and small touchscreen friendly at that. If this is what they can come up with, then they probably should have put all their resources into this, and rather than splitting their resources between this and the hardware of making the phone itself, which Anyway, without getting into that, we all know what my views are and on that point of view. But seems to be that they do have talent, and they have talented developers and talented designers, so they probably should have put all their eggs in this basket. But who knows what they'll do in the future. But this does seem to be quite well designed.
It's hard to sell Phosh for $2,000 a piece, you know?
Hey. And that's why you can get it on the Pine phone for $150.
Hey. next up, the best ebook reader app for Linux just got even better. Connor.
So I was having a look around. So the idea of reading an ebook on your desktop, not a lot of people might think it would be very exciting or something like that, but some of these ebook reader apps have things like highlighting and you can change things around and also a kind of a distraction free mode as well. So if you want to have your rich experience and with the highlighting and maybe being able to click on the links and being able to look things up as you're reading something, maybe it's a technical manual or it's a manual on, it's an ebook on coding or something like that. You could be trying to learn programming and coding while you're reading along, and you want to click on the example links within the ebook. Or there's a distraction free mode if you're sitting down in front of a novel and you just literally want to read and then click through, then there's that kind of a zen moment that you can have. I'm not a massive ebook reader, but I can certainly see how some people are. I don't own an ebook and e-paper display traditional ebook reader. The idea certainly has intrigued me in the past. One thing I would say is if they ever come out with a color screen version of it, because then I could read the novels and the ebooks, but I could also read colorful comics on it as well. I mean, I know you can read comics on the regular ones, but the fact that they're grayscale and black and white, there's something that's just extra about the color gamut of that when you're kind of looking at comics. So if they come out with a color ebook reader, that is something that I definitely may have to purchase, because it'll be the best in both worlds. And to people who still say get an Android tablet or something like that, I'm like, yeah, I like the additional functionality I like the technology of the e-paper display and the long battery life that it can come with. So if you can have those benefits as well as being a comic book reader, then I could be on board.
Yeah, look, I like the look of it. Like, I looked at screenshots and there's a nice little GIF on that article especially, but I did have a look at it and it is nice. I didn't actually even realize, like, when I saw the kind of run the features of this app, I was like, the first thing I thought was something you actually said then. I was like, well, if you have coding books or technical books or you know, books that were being able to copy and paste would actually be really handy, and you know, follow links and go back to different bits or choose your own adventure novel, either or. And yeah, like I was just, yeah, I never even thought of that. Like, and it actually looks really lovely. It looks nice. It's a very nice way of presenting a page on a screen. Like, it just looks very lovely, you know.
To find out if he was eaten by the dragon, go to page 223.
Click. Nice. So anyway, I think we'll move on. That is a cool app though. I'm probably going to download that. That looks really cool. So next up, Linux distro alert. Whoop, whoop, whoop. The Deepin 20 beta is finally available. I have never used Deepin, so I can't be that excited about this.
Deepin has always had something that I'm like, it looks as pretty as fuck. I mean, it's something about it is just, it's so well designed. It's as well designed as Elementary, but kind of going in a different direction. Like, they take design as seriously as Elementary does. It's just Elementary just reminds me too much of the macOS usage paradigm. So I didn't really find myself going in the Elementary direction, but this you can customize it. So yeah, you can have your panel at the bottom on your traditional Windows layout, and you can also have your macOS type layout as well if you choose. And it's certainly a great desktop environment. In fact, there's a community respin of Ubuntu called Ubuntu DDE, which is the Deepin desktop environment, and so you can have your Ubuntu 20.04 and Deepin cake and eat it as well. So it's certainly something that it's something to check out. I've seen a video demonstration of this Ubuntu DDE, the community respin of it, and they said for people whose concern about Deepin was that the Deepin store was using a Chinese server for its metrics. Well, they say rest assured, because none of the metrics are going to Chinese servers, if that is what your paranoia or your tinfoil hat is telling you is a bad thing. It's all going through the regular Ubuntu servers, and in fact the Deepin store doesn't even exist in this Deepin desktop environment, or Deepin Ubuntu DDE is because it has the Ubuntu store. So all your normal Ubuntu workflow and paradigm is there, except it's the Deepin desktop environment. So if you fancy a bit of Deepin desktop environment, but like your Ubuntu 2004 base, then maybe check out Ubuntu DDE.
Well, props to the Deepin developers, because they are based in Wuhan in China. So they've been through something right now, and they still managed to get the beta out. So
yeah, good on them.
Yeah, that's mad. I just noticed that as well. It's crazy. So meet the lightest Linux laptop ever from System 76. Well, I shouldn't say ever. That's probably wrong. But the lightest Linux laptop from System 76.
The lightest laptop ever, ever, ever.
The Lemur Pro, or how do they call it? They are all named after some kind of animals, aren't they? But yeah, this looks lovely. System 76, they do only Linux laptops, as far as I know, and Linux desktops. They have some really lovely desktops. And this new 0.99 kg, so a 0.99 kg Lemur Pro at 14.1 inch is, you know, that really looks like a real classy machine. If I was in the market for a laptop, I'd be considering it. Apparently, you can do 21 hours on the battery. You can do 21 hours for coding with Vim. I mean, who needs anything else from a computer, really?
I mean, I like light laptops. No, actually, that's a total lie. I actually don't mind. I actually quite like my laptops to be a little bit heavy. I don't know. I associate quality with heaviness when it comes to technology. I think if you can plug it in and it's heavy, it must be good. So, It's a terrible way to buy things, but yeah. But so with this, though, the issue with those small laptops or light laptops or thin ones of any description is that the I/O is always terrible. So like you need like a million dongles and extensions and stuff like that.
I don't think that's the case here. You see, I'm looking at the picture and I can see obviously barrel connector for power, and then HDMI, and then the blue USB port, and probably what is USB-C, and that's just the one side of it. So I assume we can actually
control plus, control plus.
Do a research.
Enhance.
It has.
Made the text bigger, but not the fucking picture. What the hell?
I just clicked through to their website, and they do have some more shots of it, and clear shots anyway. So yeah, it is a barrel connector that is a full size HDMI, that is a full USB 3 with the blue connector, as you said, and that does look like that is a USB type C one side.
On so there is in total they have USB C one times and two USB 3 ports, a micro SD card reader. It's very well endowed with all of these ports, so that I don't think it would be a problem. It can have up to 40 GB of DDR4 memory, two M.2 SSDs up to 4 TB. The only thing that is missing for me is a dedicated graphics card, because it runs on Intel UHD graphics. So that's the only thing that I like in a laptop is a dedicated graphics card.
40 gigabytes of RAM, meaning you can literally install your OS in RAM.
Yeah, I mean, several times over, right? But it is a really nice design as well. And it's not too expensive. I mean, it's almost $1,100, which if you had it shipped to Europe, it probably would climb up considerably. I don't know what the taxes on these things are, but
And before ultra nerds in the audience start emailing in and say, "Oh, you could run OS in RAM before." Yes, I am aware of Puppy Linux, where you can run it in whatever between 500 and 500 megs and 1 gig of RAM. You could probably run it in 256 megs of RAM. And there's also Debian Dog, which is the Debian version of Puppy Linux. The more you know. Anyway. and yes, I've tried out both of those, and they're both really interesting. But it's just, you could run regular full desktop Linux in RAM with your 40 gigabytes of RAM is what I was getting at. So your full blown KDE with all the fancy hotness, and you can probably run that in 20 or 30 gigabytes. But yeah, just the figure stood out to me when I saw the 40 gigabytes. I was like, holy shit.
Oh, that's not that uncommon though. I have 32, which is
I have an ordinary amount of 16 gigs. Not that's that ordinary. I mean, my laptop is 8.
No, you can run Linux really well on 8. I think, but it's getting more common. Maybe next year 32 is big on us, because right now 16 is the kind of thing that if you were buying a new laptop, I don't think you'd go for less than 16. Maybe next year is going to be 32 gigabytes of memory. I know that you can still buy like a 4 gig Acer in PC world, but that's not the kind of machines that most Linux people would buy.
It's not the kind of machines I'd be associating with now.
Before we get too confused between me saying how much RAM Linux needs to run, I meant run the entire operating system in RAM exclusively. So yeah, I'm just It'll be like running Kubuntu on a 4 gigabyte hard drive. I'm just saying that's the amount of storage you'd need. But anyway, that's all the point that I was making.
That's the thing. Like with I don't know if any people probably already know this, but so it's probably not that interesting. But someone told me in college that it's like Google are able to have such fast search results because they cache everything in RAM, like literally everything. And I was like, fucking hell, how much RAM is that? And what's the power bill? I don't know what everything means, but they cache everything in RAM. And that's how they're able to serve up search results so quickly. That could be an old hat trick. I mean, I went to college a few years back, so I don't know.
I'm sure it is. I mean, I think that's the whole thing was the Google's, what they did was, they at the very beginning, they bought everyone else's old discarded hardware that nobody wanted, and then their software was just so optimized and so efficient that they, using old hardware that they bought for cheap, but just like multitasking, in other words, rather than having one ultra powerful server, they had maybe 5 or 6 really shitty servers, but those 5 or 6 really shitty servers kind of added up to being as good as, if not better, than the one.
Yeah, they squeezed every penny out of those servers. Which I'd love to do if I had the room. I'd love to buy up a whole lot of old networking gear and just go to town, just get real down and dirty, you know. Get out, like, just wrap myself in Ethernet cable for about a whole weekend. I don't know why. I just love networking.
I'm sure there's members of our audience who pay to see that.
I certainly hope not.
This has taken a turn, then.
No, I mean, I did have an idea during quarantine in the house. I thought this house is like, data connectivity and stuff is very terrible, and I had the idea of running like the junction box with the bloody phone line outside is terrible, like, and the DSL is always dropping out and it's shite. So I wanted to replace all that stuff myself and have like a fucking central server under the stairs, and basically everyone just remotes into a session on that server, and nobody has a computer in the house anymore. I think Linus Tech Tips said something like that before, but yeah, it's ambitious, but someday.
Just when you're saying that, I was thinking Linux Lads erotic card calendar coming soon.
I think now we lost. Now that we lost everyone. Like.
Hey, sex sells, okay?
Yeah, but this doesn't.
Just, oh boy. Shane saying that he's going to wrap himself up in Ethernet cables.
Hey, not like that. God.
I'm exhausted and giddy.
I did not mean in an erotic fashion. I just meant I will have a lot of Ethernet cables about me because I'll be working with them doing entirely non-sexual things, and they will just get wrapped around me because I'll just be so busy and involved in the work that I'm doing.
All right. Moving on.
So anyway,
do we have anything to move on to?
Do we ever? So shout outs. So we've only got one shout out, as as some of you may or may not know, Joe Ressington, friend of the show of Late Night Linux and Linux Academy, etc. fame, got kind of I don't want to say fired, but I just said it, so fuck it. He got fired. So obviously he's kind of probably wondering about money and stuff. So, you know, maybe help him out, listen to his podcast, maybe have a look at his Patreon. He helped us out a lot at the start, so we're basically just saying, hey, help him out, please.
No, I'd just like to echo that sentiment. I mean, Joe is an absolute stalwart of the Linux podcast community. He has high standards, but and he certainly did ball break us at the beginning. But those high standards ultimately allows us to raise our collective quality and cause us to push ourselves, and so he kind of drove us in a direction, and we're thankful for that. He's a genuinely nice guy. Any time that we've met up with him in person, both for the Fostock Live and also any time that we bumped into him at Odd Camp, he was always up for having a chat, having a couple of beers, and chilling, and very, very down-to-earth, stalwart guy. So it's shocking news that he found out that he was no longer being employed by them, but these things move on. Hopefully he's able to find something to in the podcasting realm that is able to occupy his talents in the future, and I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will bounce back from this. But if you guys listening to this are fans of the Late Night Linux podcast and anything that Joe Ressington does, feel free to go over to his Patreon and throw him a couple of bucks. Everything helps, and I'm sure he'd be very much appreciative yeah. of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can add my voice to this. Late Night Linux is one of my most favorite podcasts, and User Error was, unfortunately, now one of my most favorite podcasts. But I hear that I think on the latest late night Linux, Joe said that he might be doing something with Dan and Alan Pope again. So that would be amazing. And yeah, as my colleagues here said, patreon.com/late night Linux. If you want to show Joe and the podcast and your appreciation.
I'm not your fucking colleague.
I was going to pause there and say, and my colleagues, but, you know, it was...
Hey, we don't get paid, man, so we're not colleagues.
Okay, so what are we then? Comrades or...
Linuxlads.com/support. So yeah, but yeah, anyway, not to beat a dead horse, but Joe, thanks for texting me and telling me how shit at editing I am. It made me a better person.
He has, no, genuinely, he took that to heart and it drove him. And as you list to your listeners, we'll be able to tell from the editing of this podcast, wink, that Shane's standards has gotten a lot better. And we've all learned lessons as we've been doing the podcast. We've all learned lessons about how to do a better podcast. So we've all got better as we've been picking up little tips and tricks here, there. And certainly a lion's share of them have come from Joe Rissington's direction, so fair play to you, Joe. And just as Mike was saying that, I did see that rumour on Twitter. I think it was Dan tweeted out and said, if we were to do something that is not user error, what would we call it? And not user error. So I
error
think they
were
looking...
User?
I think they kind of heavily hinted at they were going to continue with the three of them, but they're just going off independently using their own thing. I said, so something that is very much not user error, but if we were to do a thing, what would we call it?
And that would be the greatest Easter resurrection.
Hey, hey.
So next up, events. There are none because there are no events. Yeah. Next.
thank you, COVID-19.
Yeah. Nothing is happening anywhere. So, next, what have we got? Socials. You know the drill. linuxlads.com/telegram/mastodon at linuxlads on Twitter. show@linuxlads.com. Why am I speaking like this? there's always one I miss, though. I think it's... No, I said Mastodon.
No, you have all of them, I think.
Okay, good, good.
Anyway, the linuxlads.com has all our details, and that's really all you need.
Yeah, when you're giving Joe a fiver, give us a fiver too, please. Thank you.
Yeah, linuxlads.com/beer.
Yeah, /support. You know, if you want to give us some money, but you know, since we're going to have a depression and all that, that's probably less likely than it ever was. anyway, on that note,
yeah, oh, thanks for lifting note. The spirits.
So anyway, yeah, we're the Linux Lads. I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Mike.
See ya.
Bye.